Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development. Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Lay your hands on the radio! Lay your hands on the radio, band at home!
It's that psychedelic time of the year. Do you know where your brain cells are?
Love Talk Radio.
You know, there's an enormous industry in this nation that is churning out day after day at the cost of billions of dollars the sensation, entirely erroneous, in the body politic that everything is okay and everything's going to keep on being just the way it is now on into the indefinite future. But of course,
Radio Free Canada
have not purchased that bill of goods.
Remember, all I'm offering is the truth.
You can't handle the truth!
Welcome to Radio Free Kansas.
Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Fidel, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas.
I'm telling you, there is all kinds of stuff happening in the world today, isn't there? Unbelievable. It is unbelievable sometimes. You know what I mean? This isn't something normal. We're going into the holiday season, as they call it, and this is what we get. If you have any questions about why I titled today's show Genocide Joe, it's because some wise ass spray painted that on the walls of the White House over the weekend. And that's right, Genocide Joe on the deep. I mean, do you realize how hard that would be to get? You talk about a security breach. That is some kind of wild stuff. I'm glad that we're going to have Dave Lindorf on early, and then John Grant, and probably a mix thereof. Something about it. This is the latest news in brief from the United Nations. I'll be right back with you.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. In Gaza, where two UN-run schools received direct hits over the weekend amid intense fighting, the plight of civilians continues to worsen as heavy rain falls across the enclave. A tweet by the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, on Monday described the situation in shelters as unlivable. It said that Gazans had no options and echoed repeated warnings from UN humanitarians that nowhere is safe. Since Hamas's terror attack on Israel on the 7th of November that claimed around 1,200 lives with nearly 240 hostages captured, hundreds of thousands of Gazans have fled south following an evacuation order from the Israeli military. Satellite images of the exodus showed a mass of people moving across a landscape of shattered buildings, while photographs taken at ground level showed families carrying their belongings on foot and a woman dragging two babies in car seats behind her. According to the UN agency, more than 880,000 internally displaced persons have sought shelter in 154 UNRWA installations across all five of Gaza's governorates. Out of Gaza's 2.3 million people, 1.7 million are now displaced. To date, 104 UNRWA staff have been killed. The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, told journalists on Monday in New York that the number of civilians killed in Gaza was unprecedented and unparalleled in any conflict since he took office in 2017. In a related story, a top UN human rights panel expressed acute concern on Monday that beyond the Middle East, one in five children worldwide lives in an armed conflict zone, highlighting the need for ceasefires and a return to the basics of humanitarian law to safeguard life. The UN Committee on the Rights of the Child marked World Children's Day on the 20th of November, saying that the day had become one for mourning, given how many youngsters have died recently in armed conflict. The panel of UN-appointed independent rights experts, who are not staff of the United Nations, said that 468 million children live in areas of armed conflict and that they are dying in many parts of the world, from Ukraine to Afghanistan to Yemen. In 2022, the global and confirmed figure of children killed or maimed was 8,630, according to the committee. ABBA superstar Björn Ulvaeus has joined forces with the UN agency WIPO to launch a digital platform that helps musicians to be rewarded fairly for their work. The free-to-use platform is called Clip. It features curated content from experienced musicians and mentors to help creators understand how to make better business choices in partnership with the Music Rights Awareness Foundation. The UN agency WIPO, which stands for World Intellectual Property Organization, said that although digital distribution is soaring, artists often lack the critical information they need to get proper credit. By early next year, the Clip platform will be available in 6 languages, including on a smartphone. ABBA's Mr. Ulvaeus said that the information would be invaluable to songwriters facing growing pressures, including from artificial intelligence-based creative content.
Today it's more difficult to be a songwriter than ever because of competition, because of the complexity of the music industry itself. A tool like this is sorely needed. Whenever you have any kind of question about the music industry, it's all in here, and it's being updated as we speak. Because the music industry is getting more complex every day with AI entering the scene as well.
Bjorn Ulvaeus of ABBA, ending that report. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
And here is an interview taped about Gaza. Taped, I don't know if it's from Gaza or from the UN headquarters 2 days ago.
Adnan Abu Hasna, UNRWA spokesperson in Gaza, thank you so much for joining us from Gaza right now. Can you please share the latest on the attack on the UNRWA school in the north of Gaza today?
Yes, we are talking about Al-Fakhura school. It is a very famous school that had been also under attack in 2008 and 2014. Also, at that time, there were displaced people and tens of Palestinians were killed and injured at that time. Today, unfortunately, according to the Ministry of Health, there are nearly 200 people have been killed and injured. We don't know the exact figures, right now, if the number, increased or not, but this is what the Minister of Health said, this evening. It is a school, belonged to UNRWA, and it's very well known to all parties.
When you say it's well known to all parties, everyone knows that this is an UNRWA school, knows the location, that's what you mean?
Yes, there's been locations and knows everything about the school. We are sending on daily basis the locations of our schools to all parties, including the Israeli side, twice a day. We are sending the locations and all the parameters of all shelters in the morning and in the afternoon.
Were there any UNRWA staff working in this shelter at this time? And what did you hear from them?
We don't know. We don't know because, we don't have, real information about what happened in the northern part of Gaza and the Gaza City, after 12th of October when the Israeli army, instructed, people of the north and Gaza City to evacuate, actually. We don't know what's going on, even the exact number of the displaced people or whether we have the staff there or not.
Mr. Abu Hasna, the vast majority of UNRWA employees in Gaza are Palestinians, Palestine refugees. They've paid the ultimate price, losing more than 100 employees until now killed in Gaza. But you also hear the criticism towards UNRWA from civilians who are losing their loved ones. How would you respond to that?
Yes, unfortunately, we lost right now 103 UN staff or UNRWA staff, and this is the biggest number in the history of the United Nations. The United Nations never lost such a huge number of its employees in 1 month. Unfortunately, also that we are exposed to the same danger, whether it's there is our blue flag rising on our installation or not. There is no safe place in Gaza. For the criticism of the people here in Gaza, yes, they have all the right to criticize UNRWA and other, because what we provide to them, it's not like what they used, to get. We are the only body, to remain, functioning in Gaza. 2.3 million Palestinians, they lost everything, and they demand from UNRWA to give more and more. We have limited resources. The amount of goods and assistance that coming through Rafah crossing is so limited. It's like a drop in the ocean. So we understand the anger and and the frustration, as we are the only address now for them. We are, we are risking our life, but we are moving despite all the shelling and the destruction and the attack, the bombardment here and there, but we have no choice. We are UN staff, and we have to work, we have to deliver despite all the danger surrounding us. And as you said, the majority of the staff, they are Palestinians, and in the end, they are serving their people also.
Mr. Abu Hassan, you have a long experience with UNRWA, a long experience in Gaza. I've interviewed you many times before, and I think from our interview, I can tell that you have never seen something like this before.
I never, ever dreamt about something like that. I never dreamt that I would see hundreds of thousands of Palestinians being displaced and pushed to the southern part of Gaza Strip, and going in the streets of Rafah, and in the middle area, you will see, people are frustrated, angry, lots of tension. They don't know what to do, and it looks like a nightmare for everyone. And you go on the street, you go to work, you are in the market, in the worship, places, and you feel like you will be exposed, you will be targeted, anytime. There is no safe place in Gaza. The level of the risk, actually, is huge. People are hungry, and they are thirsty, and, I never ever in Gaza, saw lines on the retailers, like hundreds of meters, and people are quarreling and so crowded, shouting, screaming, or on desalination plants, the ones who are still functioning. You can see thousands of people waiting for drinkable, water. Actually, people, they lost everything. They don't have cash. They came to this area, to Rafah and Yunus and the middle area, only with their own private, personal clothes. They don't have anything. Even they don't prepare themselves for winter. It's something, it is a big dilemma. And we are, as UNRWA, in the middle of that, and maybe this is the first time also there that our staff, that they are displaced also. They are displaced, they are, living in shelters, and it's really very frustrating.
That's the interview on November 19th, and here is from the Young Turks, TYT, a clip I picked because I thought it was significant and would help all of us understand what's going down. It was taped, what would that be, Friday.
The Israeli Defense Forces are now telling Palestinian civilians to flee parts of South Gaza, which of course is the part of Gaza they had already fled to, as the aerial bombardment by the IDF really focused on northern Gaza. Now, I want to be clear, there were also aerial bombardments in southern Gaza as well, but the claim was, well, just move over to the southern region of the Gaza Strip, and that's where you should be relatively safe. Well, now Israel has ordered civilians to leave four towns in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. They made these demands beginning today, raising fears that its war against Hamas could spread to areas that it had told people to flee to. I mean, it's not just raising concerns. They're going to start bombing areas that people had already fled to. So think about how densely populated Gaza already was. And then they had half of the population in the north moved. They displaced them to the south, thus making the south even more densely populated. Now they're going to do aerial bombardments and air raids in the southern region of the Gaza Strip. If you think the civilian death toll is already terrible, I mean, what do you think is going to happen in the coming weeks?
Guys, this is an indisputable genocide, and you can get your feelings hurt by that. But let me explain Srebrenica. Srebrenica was when 6,000 Muslims were killed. It was not an attempt to eradicate all Muslims from the planet. It was not an attempt to eradicate all Bosnians or Albanians or Turks or whoever else was in Srebrenica. But it was targeting Muslims in specific, and it killed civilians at a significant rate. And that was called a genocide by the United Nations. This is twice as many civilians killed. They're obviously targeting civilians. You can't say that they thought that there was a Hamas member in 50% of the households in Gaza. They bombed 50% of the households. They claim that Hamas had this headquarters in Al-Shifa Hospital. It turns out a total utter lie at this point. And then half the hospitals are in the north. They were all shut down. So, no, they're not even trying to. Now, they might be trying to get Hamas here and there in different instances, but overall, the 7,000 bombs that they dropped on Gaza were indiscriminate civilian killings, and then moving millions of people. And now you've got 2.3 million people squished into even tinier piece of land, and then they're going to start dropping bombs on their heads. And what? Imagine your child. If you have a kid, imagine your child is in a building, and Israel's about to drop a bomb on it. And they go, oh, so what? Your kid was a human shield. We think maybe Hamas is in a tunnel underneath. We know that the bomb isn't going to affect the tunnel at all, but we are going to drop the bomb, and your babies are going to die. But, oh, no, it's not a genocide. Collateral damage, wink. By the way, what the hell are you going to do with Gaza? Now they've got cabinet members in Israel's government saying, yeah, maybe we should move out all those Palestinians from Gaza. You're going to steal the land, right?
Hold on. You're
going to steal the land, right?
Yes, that is what they're going to do. Let's be clear. And this isn't just me speculating about it. They're just saying it. So I got to get to all of those details in a moment. But first, the reason why we know that they're now telling Palestinian civilians to flee parts of southern Gaza is because they're dropping leaflets letting them know, we're going to bomb. So you need to get out of Dodge, right? Although there's really nowhere to go, that's the other problem. Let's go to graphic 6. Here's what the leaflets say. The acts of Hamas terrorist group require the defense forces to act against them in the areas of your residence. For your safety, you need to evacuate your places of residence immediately and head to known shelters.
Which we're also bombing. There's nowhere to go. It's a prison. Release the hostages, Israel. Right now, Israel has 5 million hostages. Palestinians they have kept imprisoned for 56 long years under a brutal occupation. Now they have taken over 2 million hostages and squeezed them into a tiny area where they're now going to mercilessly drop more bombs from the sky on. It's disgusting. It's obvious genocide. There's not even any question about it at all. If you think it's not a genocide, it's because you're enormously biased. And you can't see straight. And my people can never do anything wrong. Believe me, I lived it. I know it. I've seen Turks do it. I've seen every other ethnicity do it. And guys, it isn't about being Jewish at all. Every ethnicity does it when it's about them. Everyone. Nope, not me. Kill them. But it's not a genocide. Because my people are angels and the other side are monsters. And we need to kill all those people because all they understand is violence. No, all you understand is violence. That's the violence you're doing right now that is definitely a genocide.
Finally, let's get to what the actual politicians in Israel are saying, right? Because if you don't believe us, that's fine. But you should at least believe the Israeli politicians who are saying out loud exactly what they're planning to do. Let's begin with President Isaac Herzog, who told Britain's Financial Times that a very strong force may need to remain in the Gaza Strip for the near future to prevent the Hamas militant group from reemerging. So you might interpret that as not a big deal, but let me give you more. So there's the finance minister.
And by the way, it is a giant deal. It means we're keeping it.
Of course. Of course. Come on. Okay, but there's more. So you got Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, who heads the religious nationalist parties within Netanyahu's coalition. He said that he supported a call by two members of Israeli parliament who wrote in a Wall Street Journal op-ed that Western countries, hey, right-wingers, if you happen to be listening to this, please listen carefully, okay? Because they are urging Western countries, which includes the United States, to take in Palestinian refugees because they're pushing them out. They're pushing Palestinians. They're planning to push whoever remains after their endless aerial bombardment, they're going to push them out of the Gaza Strip, and they will be made refugees, and they need a place to go. So they're arguing, hey, why don't you take them, Western countries? We're gonna push people out of their own land, and then we're gonna force you to deal with the mess.
Guys, this
you,
is...
You deal with it. Let me give you the excerpts. I have to read the excerpts. So here are the individuals who wrote this in the Wall Street Journal. It's Danny Dannon and Ram Ben Barak. Okay, these are members of parliament. Here's what they write in the Wall Street Journal. European countries, including Germany, Sweden, and France, have provided refuge to Syrians since the civil war started in 2011. Between 2015 and 2016, Germany alone admitted more than 1.2 million refugees and asylum seekers, about a quarter of whom were Syrian. Looking to these examples, countries around the world should offer a haven for Gaza residents who seek relocation. Countries can accomplish this by creating well-structured and internationally coordinated relocation programs. Well, why don't you guys take in Palestinian civilians?
Yeah, why don't you take them inside Israel and let them vote? Oh, you don't want to do that. Guys, this is textbook ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, definitely.
Textbook. Like when you look up ethnic cleansing in a war crime textbook, this is the exact tactics you'll see. You push out the civilian population, you make other people take them, you kill a giant number of them, you force them into long marches where they die, and then eventually you just take all the land and go, we need a little breathing space for our population. So we're just going to take this land. And we're going to force them upon. You know the guys who wrote that? One of them is Mossad, former Mossad. And the other one is the Likud Party, so right-wing government of Israel, mm-hmm. right? So they're saying, and they make it seem like it's like out of compassion. Oh, the Palestinians, we care so much about them. So since we're killing so much of them and they have nowhere to go and we'd like to steal their land, hey, America and Europe, why don't you take them? Because we've already ethnically cleansed them. So if you either we could kill them all, or you could take some of them because you could be humanitarians. How about you be a humanitarian? Of course not.
Bezalel Smotrich, again, the finance minister of Israel. I'm going to go to the very last graphic here. He says, quote, the state of Israel will no longer be able to accept the existence of an independent entity in Gaza.
They're just going to take
guys, it. They say it. They just say it, okay? I have no interest. I have no dog in the fight. I have no interest to come on the show and lie and put out false information that makes Israel look bad. Okay? Israeli politicians are doing a great job on their own looking real bad with the statements that they openly say and write in our papers in the United States. So just take that in and accept it because it's the reality of the situation. And please, for the love of God, this is my number one pet peeve. Don't insult our intelligence when we can read and hear exactly what they want and exactly what they want to do and exactly what they carry out, day in and day out.
So I reiterate this daily about 3-4 times a day. This is not about ethnicity. This is not about religion. This is not about Jewish people overall. Some of the best protesters, some of the people that are fighting for peace the hardest in America are Jewish Americans, willing to get arrested, lay down their safety, their comfort, et cetera, to go out in the streets to help Palestinians. okay? So, but and Jews have been historically oppressed throughout world history, and they have suffered greatly as a people. But it is the dynamic of human beings overall. Every different ethnicity and religion does this when the situation is reversed. The minute that you have power, unfortunately, human beings are like this. They become oppressors. And in this case, Israel is clearly the oppressor. It's not close. So those two things are totally different. Don't tell me that Jewish people were oppressed in the 1800s, 1900s. That's definitely true. That's definitely true. But is that related to what the right-wing government of Israel is doing today? It is not related. It is not related. It is not because of general anti-Semitism that they had to kill all those innocent Palestinians. They are choosing to kill innocent Palestinians over and over and over again. It breaks my heart to see what they did to Israel. They took a country that was supposed to be a refuge for victims and the oppressed and have turned it into a country that is now doing the oppression itself. And it is inarguable. Yeah. I don't want to hear any excuses about why you had to murder so many civilians. It's disgusting. We should not send another dollar to Israel until they end this war and end this occupation. I don't want my money going to kill innocent Palestinian children. It's the bare minimum we can ask for. Yet in Washington, a den of scorpions, vipers, criminals, they all say, no, we don't care what the American people want. What do you think? This is a democracy? We are going to support Israel in crushing these civilians to no end. Our politicians here in America as well are monsters.
Hey, thanks for watching the video. We really appreciate it, guys. And we appreciate it if you become members because that allows us to be independent, honest, progressive, all the things that you don't get from corporate media. And all of that is because of you guys. Hit the join button below and become one of us. Become a Young Turk.
That's right. That's the Young Turks. There's nothing that was Anna Kasparian and Cenk Uygur. And I'm telling you, that's a good place to get some news. Some angles, and they cite their sources every time. Let's take a music break. I'm going to just see if we got a caller coming in. Just Count Basie, Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. And here's another one, Duke Ellington, Black Beauty, 1928. And we'll see if Dave Lindorf is supposed to call in here in a little bit. And here's another one. Boardwalk Empire, Vince Giordano and his Nighthawk Orchestra. You might remember this tune.
Yeah. you're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away. I feel so lonely. Oh, you lonely. Cause you know, honey, you've always had your way. And when you leave me, you know it's gonna grieve me. Gonna miss your big fat mama, your mama, some of these days.
Yeah, Vince Giordano and his Nighthawk Orchestra. Vince played most of the songs from Boardwalk Empire, all of them, if you remember, about the roaring 20s of the previous century. And you can almost think about that. You're going to miss this peace. You're going to miss this economic stability. We all will. We all will. Here's another one. For letting the war hawks fly. Who's sorry now?
Jump up and kiss the kangaroo. No one knows how much I am, but
Boardwalk Empire, Vince Giordano, and his Nighthawk Orchestra, from taken directly from sheet music from the Roaring Twenties, but modernized with a better soundtrack on Boardwalk Empire. Well, maybe Mr. Lindorf will call in later. I mean, who knows? We're going to transition now to John Grant with some crime jazz, and I'll be back with you.
Thank you.
I think we lucked out. We did get John Grant on the phone. I'm not sure. Maybe Lindorf will call in later. I don't know. John, you're on the phone.
Hey,
how
Mike.
Are you? How you
I'm
doing?
Good. Good. It's a lovely sort of cloudy, rainy day here, but it's, you know, comfortable.
Yeah, we got
How's
rain
it out
here
there?
We got rain here for the first time in weeks, and for the last
That's
three
good.
Days it's been raining. Yeah, well, we needed it badly. All the animals and the plants needed it real bad. So, wait a minute. I think we finally may have gotten connected with Dave Lindorf. I think this is Lindorf. Is this Lindorf?
Yeah, Dave. Hey.
Hey, John. Hey, Mike. Sorry, I'm late.
Hey.
That's all right. I just played crime jazz mostly to fill in that little short space before you called. I'm glad you're on, Dave. I'm glad you're on with John. So what do you think, man? Gentlemen? I mean, you got a new article up, Dave.
Hell in a handbasket. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking about. But where are we here?
We'll talk about your article, Dave. You just put it up here just a few days ago.
Yeah. The one about Israel hyping this idea that there's central command, sort of Hamas Pentagon underneath the Al-Shifa hospital
right.
that they tore apart. And
right.
And let's make clear that it wouldn't justify the slaughter that they've been perpetrating in Gaza if it was a headquarters under the hospital. But that said, you know, they're trying to justify having killed over 13,000 people, and or I think it's now up to 14,000, and in the name of catching Hamas's headquarters, and there's no headquarters there. So
well,
far.
The point is they're over 10-1 the killing ratio. You know, imagine back in the Nazi days when, you know, somebody went around a partisan or something and shot a major in an open car, open Jeep. You know, then then they'd go wipe out the whole village, which of course, you know, you get 10-1, 20-1, 100-1. You know, mass collective punishment. Well, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you're right.
They're using this
tunnel system. I mean, the Viet Cong used tunnels. We know guerrilla tactics employ tunnels. It's not new. They even put them under the southern border in the United States, you know, that tunnels are a function of guerrilla warfare and asymmetrical warfare. But, you know, the Israelis went in and they found like 15 guns and things in the hospital. Well, like,
that's the best they can come up with.
In a war zone, attack. You're surprised to find some weapons in the fucking hospital? No, that's not unusual. And, of course, now they're afraid to go down into the tunnel for booby traps. But that doesn't stop them, as you say, from pointing out that this is the Pentagon underneath the, you know. Right.
I might point out that probably if you did a search of any hospital in Philadelphia, you'd come up with more guns in the hospital.
Possibly,
than that. But that's
well,
a different
story. Well, the New York
story.
Times today, they just talked on the front page about attacking another hospital. You know, they seem to be unabashedly, you know, doing these war crimes as if, like, well, hey, look around the world, pal. Everybody's an authoritarian. Everybody's, you know, pushing the militarism and killing people. Why can't we, you know?
Well, of course, we do, and they're using that. They're saying, you know, look what you did to Japan in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. You know, they say, look what you did in Vietnam. I mean, this is our ally Israel saying that to us. And, you know, it's not a justification to say, look what you did, because a war crime is a war crime.
But that doesn't matter if it's justification in their minds and they go about it. You know, I'm surprised they don't use the justification of their treatment of the Palestinians by our treatment of the Native Americans.
That's too long ago, though.
Because what they're living is their own little version of manifest destiny, you know, that we used, you know, and of course it's completely different historical realms and, you know, everything is different, but
absolutely,
you know, they just think they can get away with it because they're the chosen people. And of course, you know, they were installed in 1948, which is of course very complicated. I'm going to make it very simple, but, you know, they were installed by the winners of World War II and the UN and Europe and the United States, which became an imperial monster after World War II, as we know. And,
we also think we're the chosen people. Only we call it the exceptional people.
Well, we're the exceptional people. That's our term. Yeah.
Sort of the same.
Well,
sort of the same thing. It's the same
goddamn
meaning.
I think people are picking up on this much quicker than the years with Vietnam or anything. Things are happening very, very quickly. I mean, just look at the number of demonstrations all over the country, all over the world. And look, right there inside the White House in the inner sanctorum, I was informing the listeners earlier in the first hour, I said I've changed the name for today's show only from our schedule from This Can't Be Happening to Genocide Joe, in quotation marks, because somebody...
In other words, this is happening.
Genocide Joe was spray-painted on the walls of the White House over the weekend. Somebody got through all the security.
Outside or inside?
I have yet to determine, but John, the spokesperson from the White House had to address the question on an open-air mic on press conference. I mean, I don't know where that is, but somebody's got it right inside the sanctorum of the White House.
That's amazing.
Can you...
That's astonishing.
You were in some of the big demonstrations in Washington, D.C. during the Vietnam War. I attended two large ones about the Shah of Iran in the late 70s, and there was no way you could get that close to doing
anything. Oh, my God, no.
I mean, that's
you're suggesting an inside job of a gardener or something like that.
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of dissatisfaction among the White House staff with Biden's position on this war on Gaza. A lot of people are talking about resigning within the White House staff over it.
Wow, this is
so,
really,
you know, there's that kind of disgruntled attitude from people who think that we shouldn't be providing all these weapons to Israel. And, you know, not, you know, like wimpishly saying, we'd like you to agree to a ceasefire, and then saying that they're ignoring us, you know, blah, blah, blah. But if there's that kind of dissatisfaction, it's not hard to imagine somebody taking it on themselves to write Genocide Joe on the door to the Oval Office or something, you know.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? That is really something.
That's pretty gutsy.
I've been saying for years, a couple of years now, that we are in a completely different position in this situation as the United States than we ever were, because this is a new world war brewing. You know, I've said many times, the October 7th assault functions in a way analogous to the assassination of the Archduke in 1914 in Serbia. You know, that things cascade from that and bring up old wounds and things like that. And before you know it, you know, they're having fucking trench warfare and they're stuck. And
you're absolutely right, John, because one of the things about the world today, I remember my history about World War One, and it was all these interlocking agreements to come to the aid of different parties, you know, mutual assistance pacts and stuff.
And
that's
they were
what
all
NATO
into
is.
The plumed cavalries and things like that, and the glory of war, and, you know, the beauty of the training of manhood and dueling scars and all that shit, you know, in schools. And so, you know, they had all this masculine male plumery and glory of cavalry warfare, and it turned out because of ecology, they ended up with gas and static trenches. You know, it was madness.
My wife informed me, my European-educated wife informed me quite clearly that two things over the week. One, this isn't like the Habsburg Empire, a bunch of royal families quarreling among each other into a god-awful war. Just let me finish. Yeah, that's how she defined it, World War One, is a quarrel among royal families, namely, I guess, the Habsburg, I don't know. But then she came out to me with this way out of the, I guess, left wing, and pointed out that there are significant oil and gas reserves off the coast, directly off the coast of Gaza, and there's actually a wellhead, and I'm getting ganged on. I'm doing a special show with a woman who wrote the book on Follow the Pipelines. And I'm sure she's going to reinforce this. I did not know that there was so much involved in pipelining oil through Israel and into the Mediterranean. I never thought about that from that angle. I mean, just what the hell, you two guys, brothers, what the hell are they? Is this just a pure, horrible, bloody, I mean, there are 105 journalists, 105 United Nations workers killed in Gaza, North Gaza. Over 84 journalists have been documented killed. Some and all their whole families are wiped out with the journalists.
Most Mike, most of those are Palestinians, and they don't count.
Well, you need to remind, because the people out here in Kansas, there's a significant number who just shrug their shoulders, throw their hands in the air, and say, well, I guess it's Armageddon, or we're going towards Armageddon.
That's what I'm saying, right. The religious ones say that. But
it's Armageddon.
Good. It's coming.
Let's go look at what's on Netflix. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. But really, people don't even, you know, most Americans, when they find out that those are Palestinian journalists working for American or, you know, European news outlets, they just sort of go, okay, well, they may be journalists, but they're also Palestinian, you see, you know.
Well, they're not real journalists like me. I've been through that as a freelancer. You don't have a Philadelphia Police Department press pass. You're not a real journalist.
Right. I haven't had a press pass since I worked for a newspaper.
How that works, you know. Anyway.
I'm more than ready to make out press passes to either one of you for I'm making up some
Radio
right
Free
now,
Kansas press pass. I want one right away.
Me too. Me too, Mike. I'd like one. I'll send you a photograph.
Yeah. I was just going to use that one with the hat. I think that cool hat you wear.
All right. Yeah. I'll send you that picture.
Well, you can put me and Charlie in there. I think you have pictures of me and my cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put that
on
my
you and your cat. Yeah. I will. But
every real journalist has a cat.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you something. I got a question. I just will give you the news. And I'm going to do some shameless plugging for you and TCBH.
Go ahead, man.
This can't be happening. I got, listeners, his Lindorff's book that came out, which is actually very in-depth. It is, I got the book. Okay, but I got the DVD and I watched it on Prime.
You're talking about the Compassionate Spy?
Compassionate Spy, yeah. Well, Lindorff's name's on the back. I'm holding the DVD right in my hand. It says right there, Dave Lindorff. By God, it sure as hell does. It's right by Steve James, the director. And Chris, my sweetheart, came in. Here it is. It's official. DVD ordered through Amazon, playable on Prime. It's on Prime, and then we got this is a big. We need. Where's the Ted Allen? Was that his name? Ted Hall. Where do you think there's any dead holes that will go beyond just spray painting? Maybe that Genocide Joe is the 21st, that graffiti painted on the White House. Maybe we got a Ted Hall somewhere elsewhere also. I mean, that's an incredible dynamic that people inside are not playing these games about war. What do you think about that?
How effective is somebody, you know, secreting out in the side of the White House with a can of paint and putting on, you know, genocide?
Right.
What fucking use is that going to do? I hate to be a devil's advocate.
No. I'm just saying I think it's indicative of some sort of. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, no, I would say it is what Mike's suggesting. You know, sign that the frustration and anger over what's going on is palpable and causing people to do courageous things, which that is, you know, putting that on the White House.
That's why we're building World War III. That's thing.
And so hopefully that will also be the same attitude that some people have that will drive them to do another kind of courageous thing, which would be really exposing the crimes of this administration in to the media. The question is, would the media run with it? You know,
doing
like
that for years.
You know, take what Cy Hirsch did with the blowing up of exposing who really blew up the gas pipelines in the Baltic, which is a huge act of war, and Hirsch nailed it, but he was like pummeled for doing it with unnamed sources, which of course he had to do, and everybody said, oh, you can't believe this, you know, he's a whack job, and this is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist who broke me lie. And he's now been vindicated by the Washington Post, but nobody is saying that except the Washington Post did say.
Well, listen, the current news coming out about from everybody, Republican, you know, center Republicans and all this, reinforces. I feel everything I've said for 20 years. Yeah, right. Finally, you know, all of the stuff that we've been pissing and moaning about and pissing up a poll about for 20, 30, 40 years, all of that now is coming out as evidence on the mainstream elements and things like that. And, you know,
well, some of it,
but
some of it's coming out.
That's my point. It's to me, it's a huge, huge problem. And it's like, it's so huge. It's the kind of problem that I look back and, you know, what interests me is the conversation between Albert Einstein and Sigmund Freud trying to figure out what humanity wants to destroy itself every now and then, you know, and I think that's what we're in. We're in one of those positions where history has come to a decisive moment that the shit is hitting the fan and there's no way out. There's a story today on the front page of the Times about the intractability of the Israel-Palestinian issue. Two highly traumatized people who have been traumatizing each other for 76 years over the ownership of this fucking country, you know, that there's no way out. These people at this stage are groomed to slaughter each other. And, the United States is totally implicated in it from the very beginning. And, you know, Israel has shown its colors. I mean, around the world with the former Third World and the revolutionary movements in the Third World, for instance, the one I'm aware of is Guatemala. And, you know, under the Carter administration, it was so heinous what they were doing with Mayan Indians up in the north in the mountains, slaughtering them,
by the
Carter
hundreds of thousands.
Said we don't have anything to do with these people, and so who did they turn it over to? They turned it over to the fucking Israelis, who armed the fascist elements in Guatemala with the Galil machine guns and things, and gave them all of their computer stuff to keep track of, surveil the Mayan people, because the Jews had been so good at monitoring and surveilling the Palestinians for their own purposes. And so, you know, the Israelis. South Africa is about is on the side of Hamas now, and of course South Africa was where they helped them back in the white regime to make the A bombs. And so
John, but there you don't. Not every Boyer is supported the apartheid regime, and many Boyers, white South Africans, were. Just one minute, as Dave pointed out, you know, it really is Zionist Israel that is doing this.
It's Zionists.
Letting Zionists off the hook. You're missing my point. You're not hearing it.
Okay, but here's my point. I've been getting I can say who told me this. Chris Hedges and had a guest on who pointed out who was an Israeli who I guess was marginalized, Jewish, but he basically saying right now the country of Israel has been in like a lock, stuck between the Likud, which is the Zionist right, and it's Noam Chomsky, by the way, said, and the Zionist left, and he says there's very little left.
Amen. I don't disagree with that at all.
There's very little left in Israel. What do you think?
Right.
Dave?
All of us on the left are. Could you consider ourselves losers and start from scratch? I think that's my view, because I don't. You know, of course, I was weaned by a right wing family, I suppose, very militarist family. And, of course, I rebelled, and my whole adult life has been rebelling against that institutionalization of militarism and me and whatnot. And, well, you know, the people I've associated with, we aren't doing it. We aren't accomplishing it. This war is World War III, if you will, whatever you want to call it, semantic question, that it's you know, there's more, and this is what Freud and Einstein were trying to figure out, and they failed. You know, Freud came up with this half-baked Eros Thanatos thing, which every time I mention it, people go, oh, God, that, you know, and that there's something, you know, it's like the decisive moment in photography when everything works to get it just right. Well, everything is working just now for the world to come into some major conflagration to sort itself out, because people will not cooperate these days. They want it all. We want the rise of tribalism, the rise of authoritarianism, my way or the highway. You know, my life is shitty, so we need to really get a grip and, you know, kick the ass of those other people that we decided are our problem. You know? And this is going on everywhere. And a lot of it is, there was a piece last night on MSNBC that made it very, very clear that South Africa, especially one of the leading countries in this reality, is now, you know, because Hamas made such a big splash, bloody splash on October 7th, everybody has to take sides now. There's no way out. You know, they tried to do the Abraham Accords, all these fat cats, you know, in order to make it work, but that completely failed. I'm just reading this piece by a book by the ambassador that Trump appointed, David Friedman, this big fat cat lawyer, Jewish lawyer, who, you know, has written this book, and his metaphor for the solution of the Israeli-Palestinian problem is the title of his book, Sledgehammer. In other words, crush them and then, you know, give them all this money from Saudi Arabia and all this to soothe them in their loserdom, and you know, everything will be fine, but they don't want to do that. They're not going to do that. I want dignity in my life. I don't want to be a cipher for you pricks. And so they... you know, they did what they did, and now South Africa, again, formerly ally of Likud Israel, if you will, when they developed the atomic bomb, is now completely black and is on side of Hamas, as is other third world developing countries that were, you know, under the exploitative gun of the imperialism and Western colonials. All that stuff is now rising to the surface because of this goddamn raid on October 7th, and it's not going to stop. You know
the thing that strikes me, John, is how outraged everybody is at what Hamas did, which is understandable. But where was that outrage at the U.S. when the My Lai stuff came out and you saw all the dead babies that were being gunned in, the ditch? That was all sort of washed away, and nobody really got punished except that one poor schmuck.
Having a war, yeah, right.
I mean, there's all the hand wringing and anger at the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which has, according to the numbers I'm reading in terms of civilians killed, forget about draftees and, soldiers, but in terms of civilians is not much more than what's happening in Gaza. And so there's a lot of, destruction, but, we're all wringing our hands over Ukraine and then, providing the weapons for Israel to do it to Gaza. Gaza's only 2 million people, and they've had 14,000 people killed. So, I mean, multiply that out, what it would have to be in Ukraine.
But you see, what's going on, mantra we dealt with in Vets for Peace all the time, and I think Vets for Peace gone south, I've sort of lost connection with them, wars are very easy to start because of volatile human emotions, et cetera, nationalism, et cetera, but they're just impossible to stop until everybody gets absolutely sick and tired of the killing. And destruction.
Yeah, Northern Ireland, finally, it took somebody I forget her name, that Catholic woman that, got the ball rolling.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. She got a Nobel Prize, I think. But, it took somebody to step out and really, say this has to stop. And
but
it's
the
not.
Point
I mean,
is,
the sentiment, the anger, and the anger and bitterness in Northern Ireland is still there. But
I mean, you can't stop it once it starts, and it's in its formation stage now, and it's madness is
I think it can be stopped.
Well, first of all, you got to figure out what it is here. What are you going to do?
People,
that's what I mean. Everybody talks about how horrible situations are
saying
about what a solution is. We don't know solutions.
It's very easy. The solution is very easy. I played it for 5 minutes.
And what's the solution?
This show. Well, it's defund the military-industrial complex. Defund the Pentagon. It's got to be set and back it up. Eisenhower's speech has a deep impression on Kansans to this day. It's in the endless wars.
He's from Kansas.
Yes, you're goddamn right. His federal museum is in western Kansas, in Abilene. But here's another thing. Today, the access to information is much easier. It's not all slanted. Max Blumenthal of the Gray Zone has pretty well made the case from IDF Israeli pilots, helicopter pilots, who have left the helicopter service, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, and said, we were ordered on October 7th to go out and empty our Hellfire missile magazines and all the ammunition we had, and shoot everything. And shoot every living thing out there. They massacred so many people that were their own people. And Max Blumenthal, who comes from a Jewish ancestry, is a Jew, said it's called the Hannibal Directive, where you kill the hostages, you kill everybody. Now, I'm just telling you, I learned all that from watching the Gray Zone YouTube and learned other stuff.
He was reporting, Mike, he was reporting a lot of stuff on that Hannibal directive that was published in El Haaretz, which is a really good paper in Israel that has the guts to publish this stuff.
Yeah. Well,
so,
I'm telling you,
you know, it is true, and, you know, people in Israel know it's true.
So what would happen if there wasn't the funds to set up two carrier task force in the Mediterranean outside off the coast of Israel? What would happen if Israel knew that beforehand? Do you think they would have bombed Gaza like that or tried to do some police thing and police work and hunt down the people that came over there and killed their children, although it's come out that they were killing their own children too through helicopter gunships. I mean, this is the kind of madness this is what I'm talking about.
Armaments.
And I think the American people out here in the center, you know, I think people are fed up with it. I know many conservatives who are fed up with all the, you know, Lindorf, you tipped me off to that years ago, and you're going to have the honor of a Kansas Blue Book with that article published so many years ago about how the Pentagon couldn't even audit itself. You know, that was a big article, bigger than you know. I shared that article with many, many Republicans, and they were
Want to audit themselves, and they don't want anybody else to.
No.
Of course not.
We don't care what the Pentagon wants. How come we don't have a website that just details every arms manufacturer, how much our government, representing us, how many arms they're buying, who they're shipping, giving the export licenses to? An open website.
Big front page story on the Times today about this company that the United States taxpayers have paid through the Pentagon to create 5.56 millimeter ammunition for the AR-15s, M-16s, and all that creates these, you know, millions of rounds of this AR-15 weapon, you know, ammunition. And they have traced that ammunition is sold to civilians all the time. And, you know, all the shootings, school shootings, are used with bullets that were manufactured with the aid of U.S. tax dollars. You know, so, yeah, the arms industry is seeping into everything. You know, there's so many goddamn weapons being produced, and it's not supervised that, you know, that the weaponry is filtering into the whack job AR-15 world, you know, and it's, you know, it's totally insane. And that's
actually lifted the article
on the
from
left, all this stuff about how horrible it is, but it's a runaway train. That's the problem.
The Times actually lifted that information from a much better article in the Wall Street Journal that ran for three pages in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal pulled that up. Yeah, absolutely.
They traced the growth of this one company that started the AR-15, got the contract from the military for it, and then saw, you know, much greater potential for selling it to Americans, and built the they initially couldn't get into the gun shows because people, you know, legitimate hunters looked at them and, you know, rolled their eyes, and they had to be in a separate room. But then later they made it through marketing into like the gun that you had to own to be like a macho man.
Of course. Yes, true. Well, great.
What would be so inappropriate about having a website like a Department of Defense arms sales or something like that?
It would be hard to do.
The government should provide that to us.
I think it's reinventing the wheel, because they have that information at Institute on the Costs of War at Brown University, and also POGO, the Project on Government Oversight.
POGO.
So POGO, Project on Government Oversight.
The enemy is us. Yeah, it was POGO.
yeah, right. Well, that's a great organization, and their stuff is all public. So right. I would urge people to go to Costs of War and Pogo, or sometimes if you go to Pogo, you get a bunch of things, but it's Project on Government Oversight.
Thank you.
But you know, I don't know. I can't help. To me, it's all. And again, this is my skew in life. You know, I've skewed myself into kind of literature and all that horse shit. You know, that to me, this is just a world scale tragedy. It's just, you know, a tragedy in the Aristotelian sense of, you know, you're hoisted on your own petard. You know, you've made the decisions in the first act and the second act, which lead to your death and demise in the third or fourth act, you know, all those Shakespearean tragedies and all that, that people create the circumstances of their own demise and downfall here. And this is what Freud's trying to talk about, the Thanatos, the death instinct. We have this impulse to destroy ourselves and others. And I think
while we're discussing ourselves with that, What about the fact that fatalist?
Fatalist.
What do you guys think about? You know, come on.
How about this point that I just read yesterday? Two things that were very, very disturbing. That while we're killing each other with weapons, that the Earth passed for the first time the average temperature of the Earth passed 2 degrees. Celsius above any prehistoric time of humanity, and that's two degrees Celsius. Forget the 1.5, and it's only going to be, they said, 2 to 3 years before we permanently cross the 1.5 temperature that becomes self-perpetuating. And
yeah,
that
the future
we're
kind
going
of out of Blade Runner, you know, it's like
and they said that on the path we're on right now, which is going up, not down, we will be at 3 degrees Celsius over historic record by the end of the century. 3 degrees, that's 6 degrees or 5.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That's an enormous increase in heating. And at that point, it's over.
Well, you know, it's never over till it's over, I guess. You know, if you think of the Blade Runner view of life, the idea that no matter how dysfunctional and crazy it gets, that, you know, human tenacity, human beings will survive. You know, we may assume some of the characteristics of cockroaches in the future, but, you know, we will survive in some way. But that's not exactly a way we would want to survive.
How can any sane population allow this kind of warmongering going on while we're destroying ourselves, you know, existentially destroying ourselves with the climate?
That's like Vester Peace used to say, which always got me, abolish war. That was our theme. Oh, great. That sounds really warm and fuzzy and good, you know? But wait a goddamn minute.
No, it's the wrong answer. The right answer is eat the rich.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
Man.
I like that. The guy that ran the UAW strikes would run around with a T-shirt that said eat the rich. I was all for it. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's the answer. I mean, you got to get rid of capitalism, basically.
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean,
to,
we're not going to eat, bitch. You know, what are you talking about?
We need to
do Bernie Sanders, and we need to transfer wealth. And you're right. You're absolutely right.
You're going to run
into some really armed and, you know, gated communities that are going to, you know, not want that, you know what I mean? And so that's your civil war here, you know?
I think they're changing. Yeah. I think people are changing, honestly. Even
I think they are. I think times are changing.
Because people
I, and I think certain liberalism in the future is sort of inevitable. Like, you know, allowing people to take drugs and things like that in the future is like, you better have the capacity for people to zone out if you're going to have a world that's so fucked up as the one we're sort of cruising into, you know? And so,
look at Nikki
Haley.
Mike,
when Kansas elects the socialist governor, I will start having hope again for the U.S.
Oh,
well,
we had
okay,
several
that's...
counties. We had several counties.
Well, you have
in
a Democrat
century.
Female, for God's sake.
Yeah, but she has
thing, isn't it?
The problem is
that's not enough.
Firmly,
that's
firmly,
not enough.
Firmly, that's right. She's firmly
well, certainly
ensconced.
Certainly, it's not enough. Us free guys. That's for damn sure. Yeah.
She's been firmly ensconced in the Democratic Party as a senator in the state house
uh-huh.
for over 30 years. So she's I call her
right.
embedded. But
right.
but nevertheless, I mean, I look for people. About that attitude about the war and the endless wars, and it's really a bipartisan thing. It's a gut thing. People, no
but
matter
you know,
what
you know, if I could
recognize
out.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
well,
no, you
I'm
go
just
ahead.
Saying,
I'm sorry.
I'm just speaking about Kansans on the grassroots, and
yeah.
I know even in out North Alabama between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Pennsylvania.
Right,
I know there's people out there that would agree that this money spending, these bombs, all manufactured, these endless wars,
yeah.
I really firmly believe it's possible to really change things. Another example, contemporary example, is Nikki Haley, her put on the grill about, is she really secretly for abortion? Abortion is falling apart as a platform in the GOP.
Nick.
People know that
right.
they know that they're going to have to dump that. Who is the Teamster president and that idiot from Oklahoma in the House of Representatives? Just last week, he was Ooh. Attacking an idiot in the House of Representatives from a representative of Oklahoma. Made big news because he attacked the head of the Teamster and got up out of the chair. It's Bernie Sanders.
Oh, right. They were going to have fist fights. Yeah, right.
They were going to have fist fights. Now, that
get
made
your
big
butt
headlines.
Out of the chair. Okay, I'll get my butt out of the chair. Okay.
But everybody saw that it was over right to work. It was the argument was
right.
over right to work and being able to join a union. And there's everybody out here that was like going, man, that ain't right, trying to beat up a guy who's trying to get people to join unions. I'm telling you, that's out.
Yeah, but
the
reactionary right, the corporate right, the big bucks, fat daddy, fat cat right, I just think of my brother, who's a Vietnam vet, a reasonable guy, a property lawyer in Naples, Florida, of all places, the gated city of America. And, you know, he's done pretty well in his life. And I remember I was talking, he's pretty liberal for a registered Republican. And I'm talking to him, and I say, well, Dick, you know, we've got to, you know, reshift wealth in America. It's just too skewed. It's going, the rich get richer and all that. I have never seen my brother react with such fury as to when I suggested that his money be distributed to poor people. You know? I mean, he went ballistic. I said, Dick, chill, man, chill. It's okay. I'm not going for your bank account right now, you know? And so there's a
right
tremendous...
now, I like that.
Well, it'll be so slow among that strata of our society. They won't even miss it. They won't care anyhow. We're just talking about basic crap like Medicare for all. You know, people being able to join unions without being fired immediately and have to wait 3 years to get a settlement, you know? I mean, it's just such a
right.
my son is considering working with the IRS. He's applying for a federal job, and I encouraged him. I said, sure, you know, it's a 30-mile trip, you know, you commute, but that's nothing out here in Flatland, you know, where we live. I mean, that's everybody drives.
Yeah, I talk to at the Panera when I go to get coffee and read the Times in the morning. I often run into this. Vet who worked for the IRS for like his whole career, you know, and he's a Trump voter and all that. this. You know, I like the guy. And, you know, it's, I mean, he spent his life in the IRS. And, you know, he sits there and he does crossword. You know, he has no wife. And he does crossword puzzles for hours at Panera.
The only above board, real IRS agent I ever met had a gold badge, and I didn't know
right.
it. But she was there every week. Our clinic was open in Wichita, Kansas, and she was there defending the clinic, and I didn't know she was there. And later on, years later, I met her, at her home, and she told me, and she did seizures. This is quite an agent. I mean, she was. She talked a lot about how these people that we're supposed to be afraid of, these people that have guns and their compounds and they don't pay taxes. She said she hadn't met one that didn't just say, oh, fuck it, I give up. Sure, I surrender, you know, because it just goes the way. No,
exactly.
they're going to go do their 6 months in prison and come out. I'm just saying people change, and I think that's the thing I'm hopeful for. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of evolution that's happening. Some good things. Unionization is going to improve, I think. But at the same time, all these other changes, with, as they say, this incredible impulse in the world for tribalism and authoritarian rule. I mean, we have it here. I mean, there's the story in the front page today. The Times loves to drill this, that, you know, some of the statements out of Donald Trump, I mean, it's kind of trite to say because it's so we accept so much of it. I mean, this guy is really a fascist, you know what I mean? We used to throw that word around a lot, but this guy is really a fascist, you know? And,
he's like following... You know, I think that I remember reading when he was campaigning that he apparently kept Mein Kampf by his bed when he was a teenager. You know,
right? I have a copy of Mein Kampf. I've read some of it. You know,
but you don't have it beside your bed.
Oh,
you're
right. I don't have it.
The orange.
No, I think everyone should read that kind of stuff.
Right.
But just like everybody should read. Marx.
Right.
But
I agree.
I got through volume 1 and 2 of Capital. I didn't get through 3. It was too fast.
Oh, no. Wow.
Marx was a little like the author of the Hogwarts.
What?
You know, the Harry Potter series, you know, they kept getting fatter and fatter, and you finally get to the last few, and they're bigger than, the Webster's Unabridged Dictionary, for those of you who are old enough to remember dictionaries, listeners.
Well, Marx, because of the Soviet Union and all that, has, I think, a lot of cred in the world that other people who also wrote about, the issues of poverty and fairness and, you know, equal distribution of wealth and, you know, all that kind of stuff that Marx and Engels and all those guys wrote about. But, you know, they weren't unique in that. A lot of people write about that kind of stuff. But somehow Marx had this impact on the world. And, of course, you know, they took it to the Soviet Union and turned it into whatever mess that was, you know? And, so anyway, I don't know, you know, Marx is Marx, Marx is Marx, and Freud is Freud. They had huge, huge impacts on the world. And, here we are, the result of all that crap, you know? And it doesn't go away, you know? All that Marxism that's embedded in guerrilla groups, say, in South Africa, you know? The ANC, I think it was, and all of that's 25 years of Mandela's prison.
None of those guys read Marx. Most of them couldn't read.
Now, wait a minute. Before we start, before
I said most
Python.
Of those guys couldn't read Marx because they couldn't read. Marx gets libeled.
What's the Monty Python show? I can't remember the movie where Life of Brian. You know, here, I want you to
listen. Yeah, like Brian.
I don't know how the quality is, but I think you'll be able to hear it. If you can, I'll stop it. Go ahead.
A thought he had during a Chrysler he was holding in Vietnam following the G20 summit in India.
This is TYT talking about Joe in Hanoi, and I thought of John Grant. Joe Biden in Hanoi.
Oh,
real quick. It's very short.
Okay.
Here we go.
In the second week of November, it's almost every goddamn day. Except I found its irony is he's speaking in Hanoi, Vietnam, about
what?
Being the Chinese, the leader of the Chinese.
And I don't want to give too much away. Let's take a look at what happened.
Matter of fact,
I'm a little lost here.
Cause that kind of conflict. I don't. Anyway, I think that there are other things on people's minds, and they respond to what's needed at the time. And look, nobody likes having celebrated international meetings. If you don't know what you want of me, if you don't have a game plan, he may have a game plan. He just hasn't shared it with me. But I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to bed.
There you go, buddy.
I'm lost.
Biden. What do you think, Dave?
I couldn't make it out. Tell me what he said.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't either. I was a little confused.
I'll make a better clip of it and send it to you. It's unbelievable. It's Joe Biden. The guy's so far out of it, man. It really is.
What's the point of just?
It's Joe Biden. Joe Biden couldn't talk coherently in Hanoi during a economic meeting just 2 weeks ago.
Well, you know, this is what Sean Hannity batters every night ad nauseum. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah,
Well, he should bail out. He should do an LBJ. But, you know, anytime you raise that, the big D Democrats go ballistic. You know, they just can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, what's left is Cornell. What's his name?
West.
Cornell West. I don't think he has a chance in hell. I can't.
No, but he's not doing that. You know what Cornell West's response is? His campaign is the way he's described it is it's jazz all the way down, dude. You know? It's jazz,
cool.
Man. I'm doing jazz on a national scale. Yeah, fuck you. That's Cornell West.
Okay.
Well, I like Cornell. He's a trickster.
Yeah.
He's an amazing trickster figure, and he doesn't have a chance.
If Trump wins, Biden will go down in history as the perpetrator of American fascism because he'll just hand it over. I mean, he's going to lose. He's like
I had lunch with some older people I respect yesterday, and everybody is convinced. I say everybody here. That's a rhetorical thing. It's not a lot of people are convinced that Donald Trump is inevitable, and you know this is the horror figure in the future. Well, I don't think he's inevitable. I don't think he's even going to be the candidate. I think this the 91 charges, et cetera, blah, 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 ad nauseum is going to catch up with him. And somehow he's not going to, you know, he could even be knocked off. Who knows? A lot of things. I think 2024 is going to be a doozy. It's going to make 1968 look like a picnic, you know. And so anything goes. This is the word, you know, it's you know, the rules, no more rules. Anything goes.
Yeah. Well,
it's
going to
be a roller coaster, baby, let me tell you.
I think one of the possibilities is that if there really is a deep state, and Trump wants to go after it when he get, you know, is vowing to go after it this time in his next term, the deep state will see that he doesn't get there.
Exactly.
You know, they,
exactly.
So that's a possibility that I would say.
Well,
exists.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking
about. But Trump's not going to die before he goes on his own accord.
The only thing that's going to stop Donald Trump is the deep state, the so-called, quote, deep state. In other words,
it really exists.
Well, as I said, what we should have had the election in 2016 if America was at least, you know, a reasonably sane society instead of this diluted head up the ass huge culture that we have. You know, that if we had any sensibility and wisdom, we would have had a populist leftist and a populist rightist in 2016, you know, a democratic socialist, if you will, and a democratic fascist, if you will, going nose to nose to sort out Americans' problems. And all those disgruntled white working class people that went with Donald Trump, many of them would have gone with Bernie Sanders. And we would have Bernie Sanders in a second term right now. If the big D Democrats had not, you know, gone with it's my turn Hillary and all this stuff. Now we're facing the same question now in a way. In other words, if Biden, the deep state dude, bails out, you know, and we get my ticket of Sherrod Brown and Gretchen Whitmer, you know, to run against Nikki Haley and some other fucking Republican, let's have it out, goddammit.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what it needs to be. It needs
but
to
we
be
don't have
like
that.
That.
We have this. We have the right against the deep state, and of course the left hates the deep state as
somebody
well.
Somebody in the Democratic Party who's a populist needs to stand up and enter the primaries against Biden. And they'll walk over him. Nobody wants him.
Dean Phillips has. It's already been done.
He's nobody.
John. John Grant and Dave Lindorf at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Check it out.